Have you ever felt like every time you go to do something really important, all hell starts to break loose, like the entire universe starts to conspire against you? We've all been there, and in fact, Neil and I were just there last week as we prepared to speak to a youth group about the power of addiction recovery through the 12 steps in the Atonement of Jesus Christ. I've also been studying a book called The War of Art, which is all about this topic. So today's podcast breaks down the why of what this is and the what and what to do about it. Remember this the next time you feel discouraged to the point of wanting to quit, that is the point of the resistance, but you're stronger and now you're smarter too, and you can overcome it. Send this to a friend who might need the same encouragement, and if this episode speaks to you, we'd be so grateful if you left a review or shared it on social media and tag me at Corinne Stoko so I can repost it. So I've been reading this book called The War of Art. It is amazing. The first time I heard about it actually was from Brooke, my sister Brooke. She was like, you really should read this. It was when I was creating the Becoming Code-Free Bootcamp, and I was just kind of telling her some of the things that were difficult that were coming up. And she was like, oh yeah, anytime you're creating something new, that's going to happen and you should read The War of Art. And I thought about it, and then I think I was just so deep into my course creation that I didn't circle back. And then in my book writing, which is what I'm deep into right now, the kind of the formula that I'm using is AJ Harper's Write a Must Read, which if you're writing a book, you have to read that book because it's amazing. My friend Spence, who's been on the podcast a couple of times, Spencer Taggart, told me about the book Write a Must Read. So I started reading it and I've been using it. I mean, that has been like my template for writing this book, but she references The War of Art in her book, Write a Must Read. And she talks about how she fangirled over Stephen Pressfield when she met him and just was like, your book changed my life. And so when she talked about that, I was like, okay, I better read it. And I picked it up and have not been able to put it down. I mean, it's so good. And the whole concept of this book, The War of Art, is that whatever you are supposed to do in life, you're going to be met with resistance. And you can call it whatever you want. You can call it the resistance or you can call it the adversary, but just this negative force that's going to try to pull you away from what you were meant to do and the hard things that will be necessary, that will be requisite to get you to do the thing that you need to do. So, I mean, we're going to talk about this also in context of how this is really fun and creeps up into our life anytime we are speaking, but I'll just read this recap because it helps to set the stage. So in The War of Art, Stephen Pressfield says, most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us. Between the two stands resistance. So that's a basic concept, but I mean, what are your thoughts just right off the bat about this?
I think it's one of those things that in retrospect, you look back and you can see it way easier.
True.
But in the moment, it's almost like it's disguised or cloaked, like you don't even see it. You're like, what are you talking about? It's just, this is frustrating, or I don't know, this is how it works for me. And this is how I saw it happen just very recently for us.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. But we should talk about that for a minute.
Sure.
So every time Neil and I have to speak, pretty much, I mean, I'm trying to think of a time that this hasn't happened, but almost every time we need to speak, and especially if it's to a youth group where I feel like we have an opportunity to make a big impact on kids who are in the most important decision-making stage of their entire lives, we are met with so much adversity, and it comes in the form of a fight almost every time.
Yeah.
And I mean, these fights can just feel so big in the moment, like the world is crashing down, and we will have gone for a long period and had smooth sailing, smooth waters. And then right before a thing, and I even told you during the last fight, I was like, I really just think this is because we have to speak this week. But we went into it like the night before, neither of us wanting to even do it because we were both just frustrated. I don't know. I should only speak for myself, but I was feeling like this is really hard for me to be in tune with the spirit when like I'm in this zone of frustration and feeling misunderstood and feeling like we can't get on the same page it prevents me from being in that zone of really feeling like I'm feeling the Spirit and I'm being led by the Spirit. And I thought what was interesting about after, so we pushed through it, we got there, we gave our talk. It really felt right. I actually think we pushed through it to the point where by the time we were on the drive up there, we were in a really good place. And we had a really good talk on the way, all the way up there. And then, you know, felt the Spirit, gave the talk we were supposed to give. And then on the drive back, you were like, I always know that it's the adversary when afterward, I can't even remember what I was mad about.
Yeah. And that's good, like a pretty key indicator to me. And I think there's like scripturally, there's things that we know of that, you know, talking about how do you know if something's right or wrong spiritually? Mm-hmm. And it's like, if it's wrong, there will be a stupor of thought. Like you won't be able to, you'll forget the thing that you were wondering about or praying about. And for me, I think coming away from that situation, there definitely was a stupor of thought. I'm like, I honestly can't even remember what I was so up in arms about. But in the moment, when it happens, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, this is so obvious and this is so clear. And because of this and because of that and da, 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 da. And it seems so compelling of an argument. But afterwards it was like, oh, I don't even remember what I was talking about. So,
yeah. And that might sound weird I think probably most couples experience something like that before really important events or really, you know, something where something really good is about to happen. You know, we talk about that. I think that happens a lot of times if someone is about to commit their life to God and they're about to, in our church, like we see that happen right before people get baptized or, you know, right before a wedding and not to say that, I mean, I had a very profound experience with my first wedding where it was not cold feet. It was definitely God saying like, don't do this. And I didn't have the courage to listen, but there's a difference between like a still small voice where God's like, don't do this. You know better. And chaos feels, it just feels dark. Right. And that like chaotic feeling when you and I are in opposition, it does not feel like, you know, of a still small voice coming from God. It feels like extreme opposition. And so I think, you know, some people I think are afraid to talk about the adversary. They're afraid to even acknowledge it. And to me, I think about life the same way I think about when I was taught to drive and how my dad taught me that defensive driving is as important, if not even more important than your offensive driving, you know, of just like getting in the car, you know, turning on the engine and then following and obeying the rules. It is so important also to be aware of your surroundings, to make eye contact with people before you go through a four-way stop, to, you know, just make sure that you are a defensive driver and you know all of, not just the things that you could do wrong, but the things that the people around you might do, because you'll just avoid a lot of pain and heartache and accidents and whatever if you're aware of your surroundings and what could be coming for you. And so I think that's really important to understand in the context of first, you know, if we want to talk from a gospel perspective, this is what David A. Bednar said in his talk called Watch Unto Prayer Continually. It's a really good talk. It's about the cheetahs and the topies and about how like these cheetahs are so good at disguising themselves. Like if you look at a picture of an actual cheetah, P.S. it's, I'm always teaching my girls like what's the difference between a cheetah and a leopard. And in case you don't know, a cheetah has just the solid black spots and a leopard has like a spot within a spot, in case you were wondering. But if you look up a picture of a cheetah as they're kind of, you know, crouching down and they're ready to attack, they can blend into their background so well. And they're so sneaky and so good at being almost undetectable. And that's how the adversary is, right? Like he's so sneaky that oftentimes, like you were saying with our conflict, you don't even realize that it's happening to you because it feels so real. You don't even realize that Satan's coming in and like pushing your buttons or trying to like manipulate you into feeling like your life is out of control or chaotic or whatever. So this is what David A. Bednar says. He says, the devil labors to make the sons and daughters of God confused and unhappy and to hinder their eternal progression. The adversary works relentlessly to attack the elements of the Father's plan he hates the most. And to me, that's really interesting that the adversary works relentlessly. He never stops. It's a 24/7 for him. And so I think understanding that and knowing helps you to hopefully disarm that more quickly. And that's what I feel like I'm learning as I'm reading The War of Art. He kind of just uncovers all of these different methods and forms that the resistance or the adversary, doesn't matter what you call it, will take to try to prevent you from doing the work that's the most important work in your life. So here's another thing that he says. If you believe in God and I do, sorry, this is Stephen Pressfield in The War of Art. If you believe in God and I do, you must declare resistance evil, for it prevents us from achieving the life God intended when he endowed each of us with our own unique genius. And then he goes on to say, resistance is faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, harder to kick than crack cocaine. I mean, there's so many good like highlighted things in here, but that kind of gives you an idea just to start out with. And, you know, then he talks about this was, he says, you think resistance isn't real? Resistance will bury you. So did I already tell you about Hitler in this book?
I think you did tell me about the example.
This is super interesting. So he's Stephen Pressfield again. You know, Hitler, he wanted to be an artist. At 18, he took his inheritance, several hundred kronen, and moved to Vienna to live and study. He applied to the Academy of Fine Arts and later to the School of Architecture. Ever seen one of his paintings? Neither have I. Resistance beat him. Call it an overstatement, but I'll say it anyway. It was easier for Hitler to start World War II than it was for him to face a blank square of canvas. That is so profound to me that one of the most powerful evil dictator leaders in the world took a quote unquote easier route of evil than facing what he felt called to do originally.
Yeah. No, I think that's pretty crazy. I think one of the the temptations that I, and this is like something that's talked about, well, I mean, we subscribe to a book of scripture called the Book of Mormon in our faith, and there's a prophet that talks about kind of like the tools and the tactics of the adversary, like what he does, what he uses. One of them that I think is really, really common is the one that talks about like, there is no devil. Like, I am no devil. There is
totally.
I don't exist. Like, that's just in your head. Like, mm-hmm. all of this, like, good, bad stuff. Like, there is no bad. It's, I'm no devil. They're all as well.
Yeah.
And I think that one is sneaky because even listening to what you're saying and how you're speaking to, you know, God versus, you know, the devil or good versus evil, a lot of people will be like, well, that's just you making choices, or that's just you and your negativity, or that's just, and I think for me, it can get in my head that way too. It's like, well, that's just me. And I think we would probably be surprised to recognize how frequently it's not just us. I think that the pendulum is swung farther on the side of like, well, that's just circumstances or God or other people, or this is just frustrating, or I'm feeling a negative emotion. I think we forget and don't even acknowledge that there is opposition and that it comes from Satan.
Right. Well, Isaiah talks about that too. Isaiah 5:20, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And our world is constantly doing that, you know, trying to like trick people into thinking that evil is good and good is evil, and that we can't have any kind of differentiation between dark and lightness because that's offensive in some way. Someone's always going to be offended if we're going to differentiate, you know, this is evil and this is good. I mean, to the degree that there is now a sexual orientation for being attracted to children, like that's so
like the level
undeniably evil. I don't care what your background is. Like, seriously, we're now going to question whether we should protect children from sexual predators because they want to identify that as like their sexual identity. Like, that is where we have 100% crossed the line from good to evil. And it's unquestionable.
Yeah, 100%.
So there's a lot of things like that going on in the world that, you know, and And at the same time, there's a lot of nuanced things. There's a lot of people who are hurt and misunderstood. And I very much understand that. And it's really important for us in our life, in our personal private lives and on this public platform to hold space for people and to not just see things always as black or white. And, you know, there's always a lot of in between because people are nuanced. And I honestly don't believe that people are good or bad. I believe that people make choices that are good or bad that oftentimes lead them down a certain path. Like Hitler he was not born a bad person. He was born just like everyone else, in my opinion, with the light of Christ. And then it was what he did with that that led him down the path to become one of the most evil dictators in the world. That was because of his choices. But getting back to this whole, like, Satan loves to just confuse us. Good is evil and evil is good. And there's no lines anymore of what's right and wrong. I think that it's really important to teach our children with all of this chaos and confusion in the world that they have it within themselves to feel and detect good from evil. Because I think the world also, and Satan also, wants us to feel like we can't trust ourselves. And you can trust yourself. Like, you were born equipped with survival instincts to know that you need to eat every day, you need to sleep, you need shelter, and to know this feels right or this feels unsafe. Like, animals can sense that. You know, they can sense when a situation is safe or unsafe. So are you kidding me? Like, of course we have those same instincts too. And of course God gave us the innate ability to sense good from evil. But Satan's really good at trying to confuse us and make us feel like we're not capable of knowing the difference between good and evil.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And I think even if you're not someone who's like overly religious or spiritual, you know, maybe the language of like follow the spirit or something doesn't speak to you, but I think you can, the concept is like follow your gut, your yes. intuition. Like there is, and even if you can subscribe to the idea of a higher power, whatever that looks like, there is a God, you know, there is a higher power, or, you know, I think that people just have different, maybe different ways of acknowledging that, but that's kind of what we're talking about. So I just want to make that distinction in case some of these, like the spirit or some of these things aren't necessarily jiving, or it's too kind of, you know, not really in that zone of communication for certain people. So,
yeah.
But same thing.
So I read this to you the other day because I thought it was so interesting, especially with what you have studied and spoken about and worked on for so many years of your life and been really open about, which is pornography addiction or sex addiction. And this is what he says about resistance and sex. Sometimes resistance takes the form of sex or an obsessive preoccupation with sex. Why sex? Because sex provides immediate and powerful gratification. When someone sleeps with us, we feel validated and approved of, even loved. Resistance gets a big kick out of that. It knows it has distracted us with a cheap, easy fix and kept us from doing our work. Of course, not all sex is a manifestation of resistance. In my experience, you can tell by the measure of hollowness you feel afterward. The more empty you feel, the more certain you can be that your true motivation was not love or even lust, but resistance. And I feel like that was such a clear description of something that I've never quite been able to put into words between that like beautiful sanctification of marriage that we talked about last week, or that I talked about with Amy on the podcast, and about how spirituality and sexuality can coexist versus the way that Satan cheaply takes that very sacred thing and spins it into something that suddenly is lust, one of like the seven deadly sins or whatever it is from, am I getting it confused? Is it Dante's Inferno or, anyway, but you know, that's one of the things that, yes, that will take you down. And so I thought that his, just that description again of like, you can tell how empty you feel. The more empty you feel, the more certain you can be that your true motivation was not love or even lust, but resistance. And thinking about how that resistance kept you in your active recovery from a lot of the things that, it's not like you didn't achieve things, but I'm just saying that it oftentimes kept you stuck where you could have moved forward. And I think that Satan sees our weaknesses and he plays on them. And he saw that within you and was like, oh, this one works. I'm going to really double down on it.
Yeah. No, I think so. I mean, that's kind of like the addictive nature in general too, is you're using something to distract you or to check out or to cope, which keeps you from maybe progression or the things that, you know, there's the, cause I think when you're really focused on doing something and progressing in your life and following that inner voice to drive yourself forward and fulfill, you know, whatever measure God has for you in your life. It's not, a lot of times it can be kind of a grinding path and or a little bit or a lot more challenging or harder. And there can be a temptation along that path to just be like, man, I just want to check out. I want to get out of the situation. I want a head change. I want, you know, and I think that there are healthy ways to balance that out. But to your point, yeah, with, you know, sexuality or pornography or whatever in that realm in a negative way, that can be a very powerful one to distract or to, you know, take someone into a different realm or a different place where it, you know, seemingly you're escaping all of your problems, you're escaping a grind, whatever you're trying to escape. And then, yeah, there is a stunt in your growth, like spiritually, in your progression. I definitely, when I was in active addiction, I saw that I felt like my life kind of grinded to a halt, like the progression of it, you know, with, I always felt like I was making headway and, you know, working through college or in work or career or relationships and, you know, working through those progressions. But in active addiction, it feels like that progress kind of just stops to the point where you're like, okay, what am I doing? Or I'm not making any headway or I'm not getting anywhere. And that, to your point, is resistance, is what you're talking about. And that keeps you from fulfilling whatever God would have you do.
Right. And it's interesting how the resistance for you is so different from the resistance for me, because I don't necessarily feel a strong pull to check out very often. Like, that's usually not my go-to, but codependency can be so crippling as far as resistance goes, because codependency is, I need other people to be okay to tell me that I'm okay. So, you know, in context of our relationship, when you were early in your addiction, in our relationship, at least, I would feel like I remember just feeling like I can't even go to sleep at night because my mind would just be churning about all of the different aspects of your addiction and how it was affecting our relationship and how is it affecting your work and how it was affecting our home life and the life we were giving our child. And it felt so like it was just stopping me from doing anything important because of the obsession of trying to control your addiction. So there's that, there's the seeking approval from other people, that codependency part of like, oh, I got to have everybody like me. Or I, you know, if you have a negative interaction with someone, then you just replay it and replay it and replay it. And that obsession of, I'm not good enough. I need to really drill down on this. I need to figure out why someone thinks I'm not good enough. That whole obsessive kind of thinking that a codependent person does will 100% keep you from the progress of what you're meant to do. And so I do think we need to start leaning into some solution here, because probably people are just feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm doomed. And I think it can feel that way when you talk about the adversary, like, well, he's just out to get all of us. So just lay down. Like, you might as well surrender now. Like, it's over. And that's so not true. So speaking from a solution standpoint for me with codependency, where I used to get invalidated from people and then just sit in it and live in it. And sometimes I would even torture myself where I would try really hard to recall, like, oh, what was it that person said about me that was negative that I need to obsess about some more, just to beat myself up, just to make sure I really understand like why I suck. And now I stop myself. I'm not perfect at it, but typically this even happened to me yesterday. Someone said something that was pretty invalidating to me, someone close to me. And instead of obsessing and spiraling and letting myself go into that, like, oh, I am unworthy or I'm a bad person or my personality makes me this way, I stopped myself and I said, what other people say is more about them than it is about me. It's almost always a reflection of what's going on inside and your insecurity, or because people who are really, really secure with themselves, and they really are, and that security comes from God. They're super tapped into their higher power and they're getting their confidence there. They don't need to say like disaffirming, is disaffirming a word? Unaffirming,
sure.
Whatever, you know, things that are kind of like negative jabs at other people because they feel genuinely fulfilled and good about who they are in connection to their higher power or connection to God. So I try to remind myself that when people say things that are at all unkind or, you know, kind of critical, that it's typically more about them than it is about me. And that also, even if it is partially true, I don't have to square with them. I only have to square with God. I only have to say, okay, Heavenly Father knows what I'm working on. Am I enough for Him? Am I making right whatever I've done wrong? And then am I, you know, getting squared up with Him? That's all that matters. It's okay if someone else doesn't approve of what I'm doing. I've had people tell me like that this book is a waste of time that I'm writing. But guess what? God has told me that I'm supposed to write it. So I just continue on. And that is what this book, The War of Art, keeps telling me, is you are going to meet resistance over and over again, especially if it's something that you're meant to do. The more important it is, the more resistance you're going to meet. And that's why I think that when you and I are supposed to speak to a group, and especially when it's a group of youth, when it's a group of like teenage kids who could get pulled out of a really dark place by hearing your story, that's where we're going to be met with a ton of resistance, because Satan's like, no, don't do it. Don't go tell these kids that they can be something more than their addiction, or that there's a better, you know, place to go with that shame or whatever. You know, the greater the impact or the higher the importance, and I don't mean like impact on a large scale. I mean, like a lot of times with you and me, it's speaking to a small group. It's speaking to, you know, 50 kids, 100 kids, whatever. I'm not talking about like a stadium full of thousands of people. I'm just saying that like the more important it is, even a one-on-one conversation with someone or keeping a marriage together, having people at odds, whatever it is, the more important it is, the more resistance you're going to be met with. But I want to read this from The War of Art because I loved it. If you're a woman, you're going to really relate to this if you've had children, and even if you haven't, like probably just because it's a really good analogy. Stephen Pressfield says, resistance can be beaten. If resistance couldn't be beaten, there would be no Fifth Symphony, no Romeo and Juliet, no Golden Gate Bridge. Defeating resistance is like giving birth. It seems absolutely impossible until you remember that women have been pulling it off successfully with support and without for 50 million years. So if people can figure out something as just wildly unfathomable as birth, like creating a human inside of you and then getting it out alive, you can figure out resistance, because people have done all of these, you know, wonders of the world and incredible things that have just completely changed our life. And so whatever you were meant to do, as bad as that resistance feels sometimes, you can push through it because so many other people have.
Yeah. No, and I think too that we just talked about this last week in our 12-step meeting. We're on step two, which is coming to believe that the power of God can restore you to sanity or complete spiritual health.
I actually love the AA version.
I like the AA version. Yeah. Sanity makes more sense because addiction is just insane. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But really, that's kind of what I love is, you know, what I shared about was the acronym for HOPE, H-O-P-E, one of the acronyms is hearing other people's experiences. So as you're talking about, it's been done before. I think a lot of these major challenges or oppositions or resistances that we run into, odds are there's somebody that we know or that we can connect with, or some positive, you know, mass media out there of people who have gone through and come out victorious or come through the other side in a better place or whatever, for whatever challenge we've gone through. And so I think hearing the experience of another person can really be faith promoting.
Yes.
And so when you're going through these situations, that's how it works for me. And that's why meetings are so amazing, is because you hear all sides of the story. You hear people coming in and they're wrecked and you're like, man, that's really just negative and tough. But relating to that, and then you hear a lot of people who are like, this is how it was and this is how it is now. And it does, it gives you hope to hear that. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are a lot of different forms of it. So connection with others and especially teaming up with other people who are maybe, you know, going through those similar challenges, but you're both focused on good, positive things. That's something that has really made a huge difference.
Yeah. I love that. That's such a great solution oriented tip, because I think too, we've talked about how there's a study that was done that kids who know the stories of their ancestors are just more resilient in life. They're more prepared to get through hard things than kids who don't know anything about their ancestors. And that's something that you can connect to your own bloodline and say, like, I have people in my family, in my bloodline, like people that I came from who did hard things, and therefore I can do hard things. Like, I love to tell those stories to my kids about their pioneer ancestors. I have so much love and respect for our Mormon pioneer ancestors who did insane things, like left all of this comfort and luxury and riches and just like amazing lives where they had built so much. And then because they felt called by God, they left it all and entered into like the depths of hell, walking across the plains for, you know, miles and miles every day, to the point where their kids are like, you know, their feet are frozen and have frostbite and their shoes have worn into holes. And, you know, they leave people dead on the trail along the way because it's just that brutal, and they did it. And that is why in our faith, that's why we have what we have. And, you know, as far as like having quote unquote Zion, like having the church headquarters established by people who are just willing to give up everything. And if you don't resonate with that, I promise you there's something in your heritage. There's somebody that did something that created what you enjoy now. So there are people who came before you and paved a path that allowed you to have something really wonderful, whether that's education or faith or, you know, something that is a freedom in your life that you enjoy now because people in your same circle or in, you know, sometimes we talk about orbits, somebody in that orbit that crossed into your life path did something to pave a path for you to go down that path. So now it's your turn to face that and to face this resistance and know that you are capable of pushing through, just like that example of childbirth. It seems impossible until you realize that people have been doing it for millions of years.
Yeah. I think that, and then really what helps me is like the spiritual side of things, like getting tapped into God for me. Mm-hmm. And really when I feel closeness with God and I feel that connection, it's a connection to truth and an absolute truth. And that validation just really clears up anything. And I think that what I really find more often, I think every time, is when I establish that connection, I find God is so much more compassionate, kind, loving, unconditional, you know, unconditionally loving of us than I ever even thought. Like, I know God loves us, and a lot of people feel that in general, but I think we underestimate grossly just how much love is there. Mm-hmm. But when there's a spiritual connection, especially when we're going through some of these challenges, as I've faced some of these challenges and can get that connection established to some degree, that I find a feeling of just love, compassion, and most importantly, truth, so I can differentiate between what's real and what's not real, what's coming from the adversary versus what is coming from God, from my inner intuition. And those actions in trying to live as close to that spirit or to that truth as possible is what really gets me through those challenging times. And that's just been the game changer, the differentiator for me. And it's kind of like the measure that I can stick to close to God is the measure that I can kind of have that differentiation and live by like that absolute truth that comes from, that only can come from God.
I think we want to talk also about, go back to what we talked about at the very beginning about marriage and how, you know, or it doesn't have to be marriage, but conflict with people that you love. And one of the things, this isn't like a perfect solution, but I think it has really helped us to grow leaps and bounds is step 10, which you often refer to as the marriage step. And step 11 is that you take a daily inventory, and when you're wrong, you promptly admit it. And to me, that changed the way that I think about an argument or confrontation or something where there's a misunderstanding, because I used to feel, before I did my 12 steps, I used to feel like until I'm ready to completely agree with you or give up my side, I can't say I'm sorry or I'm not ready to make amends, you know, because then that means that I don't, that everything that I said, I didn't mean. And when I did my steps, I realized in step 10, like, oh, you can take accountability for how you acted, even if the two of you don't agree. And if you're going to stay married, you got to just square with the fact that there's just going to be times when you don't agree. You got to agree to disagree. But what you can do is immediately take accountability for how you acted. And I'm not perfect at this, but I have really committed myself to, for the rest of my life, immediately taking accountability when I act wrong, even if we have a difference of opinion. And so I think that has really helped me to not stay stuck. Like, Satan loves for me to stay stuck and to feel like, no, I can't say, I'm not going to say I'm sorry, I'm still mad, or I still feel the way I feel about whatever. And I mean, for example, several months ago, we got in a fight because we had to let somebody go at work. And I'm just going to tell you right now that if you've ever owned a business, firing people or letting people go is the absolute worst thing that you will ever have to do. And in my opinion, I hate it. Neil hates it. Neither of us love it. It's just one of those things that's like top of the list of one of the worst things you can do, even if it's the right thing to do, which I feel like it's always, if we're going to do it, it's the right thing to do. So we got in an argument about who was going to let this person go, because you were like, I did it last time and I was out
one, two,
of
three, not it.
Yeah, exactly. And say, I was out of town. So I was like, I am supposed to be in these meetings. I was at like a business conference and I was like, you really want me to stop what I'm doing? I came all the way out here to be present and to be making these connections and working. So you want me to halt what I'm doing and take care of this when you're at home, perfectly capable. And you were like, it's not my turn. I did it last time. I hate doing this. You do it. And so we were at odds, and I'm sure you can see why we would be at odds, because neither of us wanted to do this really hard, awful thing that just, it just makes you feel crappy. Even again, when it's the right thing to do, you just feel terrible when you have to do it. So we were at odds about it. And, you know, I don't even remember what I said or how I acted. I just remember that I ended the conversation with us. And then even though I still didn't want to do it, and I still felt like I had a good reason to not do it, I just did it anyway, took care of it. And then I apologized for how I had acted, even though I still felt like in that moment, it would have made more sense for you to do it than me, because I was out of town. And I'm sure from your perspective, you felt like, I did it last time, it's your turn. Like, we both have like very compelling arguments, if you want to call it that, as to like why it wasn't right for that person to have to do it that day. But either way, I just realized like it's not worth it for me to be stuck in this kind of mindset, because in this whole idea of the war of art and resistance, I knew that if I just stayed mad, that then when I tried to go make these business contacts and interactions with people, they would be able to sense it. They would be able to sense that I was not in a good place. People can feel your energy. And if you're in like a pent up angry mood, even if it's about something that totally doesn't relate to them, they're still going to sense that. So I realized, and not even just because of like, oh, I need to like make the most of this business opportunity, but I just was like, I don't want to stay stuck. And so for me, it was, okay, A, I'm just going to do it because I'll just get it over with and then we can stop fighting about it. And B, I was like, even though I felt like I had a pretty compelling reason to not do this today, I'm still going to apologize for how I acted. And I remember calling you and apologizing for how I acted, even though I still felt like, well, you should have done it, but I'm going to take responsibility for how I acted wrong, if that makes sense. So in marriage, you're going to have these things where you feel different opposing things. You're going to have it about different family things. You were brought up in completely different, you know, one of my friends called it like an iOS the other day. Like, you were brought into life and programmed with a completely different iOS than your partner. And they were brought up with a completely different iOS of, this is how we do holidays. This is how we celebrate birthdays. This is how we say we're sorry. This is how we, you know, everything in life, this is the way it's supposed to be. And however you were brought up is the right way in your mind until you meet someone who's like, no, that's totally not how I was brought up. So you're going to have to figure out how to balance those two things out. But for me, it's been so helpful to just see that. And I hear some people say like, oh, you can either be right or you can be married. I actually still think that you can feel in your heart like you had a good reason. And in your mind, that was what was right. But it's more important to be, as you're talking about, like, you know, one with God, have the Spirit with you, apologize when you acted wrong. And then, because sometimes I think otherwise you're telling you almost are like gaslighting yourself into like, well, okay, so I have to just say that whatever I felt was invalid, because it wasn't invalid. My reason for not wanting to fire that person that day was not invalid. Like, it actually made a lot of sense for you to do it. And it actually made a lot of sense for you to be like, I'm not doing that. I did it last time. So neither of us were crazy for thinking that way. Neither of us were invalid. But I think if you're so stuck on, I'm not going to let go, I'm not going to say I'm sorry, I'm not going to make amends because that means that I don't believe whatever I was arguing, you're going to lose a lot more in life if that's where you're going to stay stuck. And Satan loves for us to stay stuck there. So I don't know. This is a really long way for me to just say that, like, once I realized that I could be sorry for my behavior and still feel like, well, I really didn't want to fire that person because I'm out of town and I have this business conference. You don't have to like give everything up that you felt in order to say, I'm sorry for the way I acted. It's a really long explanation, but is it?
No, it makes sense. Yeah. And I think in the tough one is a lot of times there's not necessarily a right or wrong answer.
Yes,
it's just what do you think, but it could be a really important issue that determines a lot, like super weighty.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, there's not really a right solution to it. It's just kind of a, you know, whatever, a preference or, you know, something else. And you have, but you're in a situation and in a relationship where you have to work it out and work together. And I think, but I think that's the whole point. It's by design. Like, if we didn't have these close relationships, if we didn't have these potential conflicts, then we wouldn't grow. We wouldn't develop. Like, there has to be attention. There has to be an opposition in order to be able to live by principles that are going to drive spiritual growth and emotional growth and betterment. But that said, man, it's hard and it's going to be challenging at different times. And so I think a lot of what I'm learning and have learned in different situations when it's something like that or something that's beyond my control or has to do with the agency of others, is being accepting and trying to have kindness and compassion and really just accepting, you know, where people are coming from or striving to be more accepting instead of trying to control, this is one of my character weaknesses, is like trying to control others, which that's not, I mean, even God, like, he can't infringe on people's agency. So like, why in the world would I think that I can control somebody else? That's Satan. That's his whole play. So just some things that I'm striving to become better at and that I'm working on. But I think that acceptance component is a big piece of it.
Yeah. And accepting that everyone is fighting these demons, it sometimes can feel like it's just you. You're the only one that's getting attacked. And the truth is, all of us are getting attacked. All of us are met with resistance every day. And especially when we're trying to do things that we really, really feel called to do, you're going to be met with even more resistance. I mean, this whole book writing thing has been so interesting to me because I feel so strongly that it's the most important work that I could possibly be doing right now. And yet it's been some of the most like disaffirming work where I'm opening myself up to a lot of criticism that honestly, like I've been doing my thing in blogging for so long that I've arrived at a point where I'm like, yeah, people can say whatever they want. Like I know what my conversion rate is. I know what my audience is like. I know what, you know, I kind of know what my strength and power is there in that world of like being an influencer and blogging. And I feel really comfortable there. That's like my comfort zone. It's so easy to be like, I'll just stay where I'm at and just sell shoes because I'm good at it. And cause that's what I've, you know, and I feel like that was a calling and still is to a certain degree, but this like vulnerability of writing something from my heart and trying to help others in the space of codependency and then also claim I'm a writer and I'm going to be an author is a whole new level of vulnerability where it's like, I'm putting myself out there for people to be like, no, you're not, or this is not worth your time or anyone else's, or, you know, whatever, like no one's going to buy this kind of a thing. And yet I feel like the measure of how important and intensely I feel the importance of this is being met with an equal or greater level of resistance. So I would just say, if you're listening to this, if there are things like that that you're trying to do, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, something with a school district or it's something like, I have a friend who just feels really like she's supposed to help in her local school district, but she's being met with a ton of resistance. And I'm like, but yet she can't stop thinking about it. And I'm like, that's when you know, if you can't stop thinking about something, but you don't want to do it because it feels really hard, you probably need to do it. And so whatever that is in your life, you know, whether it's a relationship, I mean, that Stephen Pressfield, again, in this book, The War of Art, and I do have to say, should have said at the beginning that there are some swear words in this book. So I've been going through it with white out and whiting out the swear words in case my kids ever want to read it. That's a little parenting hack if you have littles, but, so I will say that, you know, proceed with caution. There are some swear words in it, but he talks about resistance in relationships, that the most important relationships in your life, you will be met with resistance. And in my opinion, and in our belief, that's because Satan doesn't want families to exist. He doesn't want people to reach the finish line together. He wants everyone to be torn apart and miserable because he's miserable.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think that there's a temptation to kind of take the easier road, at least for me, a lot of times, especially like in, I don't know, a lot of different ways. It's like, okay, this is hard. It shouldn't be this hard. If something's right, and you know it's right, and it's hard, then it's like, yeah, I know that I've got to engage, and I've got to push through it. And there's a difference, I think, when something's just optional or it's wrong and it's just not working out or is not coming together. I've had that happen, but that's a whole different thing. But I think God gives us help. And I know that like that's a component of the atonement of Jesus Christ is grace. It's like an enabling power to help us to do things that God would have us do that we could not otherwise do without his help.
Right.
And that is kind of a loose definition of grace. And so that's the cool thing is by turning to him, we can receive grace to do hard things that are necessary for us in our life.
Well, and one last thing too, is you brought up, is something just not working and you need to call it quits? You know, Stephen King says, kill your darlings. I know you hate that, but I love it because it's like, don't be so caught up in like, I made this beautiful thing and I can't let it go. Sometimes you just have to let things go because they aren't working out anymore. You know, sometimes we've started so many things in our business where it's like, you know what, this isn't worth our time, or this isn't working out, or there's something more important that we need to be doing. But there's a difference between that and between I feel resistance, but here to me, this is the litmus test. I feel resistance and I feel an equal calling. Like I am supposed, you know what that feels like when you're like,
you know what's right.
Oh, this is hard. This is hard. I don't want to, like, there's part of you that's like, I don't want to do this because it's really hard. But then there's that equal part where you're like, but I know I'm supposed to. Yeah. There's a difference between that and between that, like, loss aversion of like, ah, I put so much into this. I don't want to lose all of that effort. And, or this is my, like, if there's kind of like some pride of, well, I worked so hard at this and this is my identity, or I don't want to let it go. Or sometimes just, I wanted this so bad, and maybe God doesn't want it for you. And you're just like clenching onto it super hard. We've had that with cars. We've had it with homes. We've had it with different things where it's like, we wanted something to work out so bad. And you have to sometimes recognize that, like, okay, this wasn't meant for you. God has something better for you. But really, if you just give yourself a second to pause and to think about the difference, there's a huge difference in feeling that intuitive gut feeling of like, oh, I think this just isn't meant for me, or it's not meant for me anymore, and it's time to let go. And you don't want to because of the loss aversion, or because it's part of your identity, or because you're just sad because you really wanted it to work out, versus this feels really hard and it feels really important and I kind of want to quit, but I know I'm not supposed to. It's totally a difference. And I feel like people know what that is. So in conclusion, you are going to feel resistance in your life. You're going to feel it about the most important things in your life. And so when you meet that resistance, don't let Satan win. Because we all know that at the end of every Marvel movie, at the end of every Star Wars movie, at the end of every major battle, like, good always overcomes evil. So like, whose team do you want to be on? You want to be on God's team. He knows what is meant for you. So when you look at those really hard things in life, cling on to God and push through, because he's the one that knows what's meant for you. Don't let Satan talk you into something stupid like World War II. Look at the blank canvas and do what you are meant to do. Thanks so much for listening to Mint Arrow Messages. We're so grateful that you spent time with us today. Make sure you go follow us at Corinne Stoko or at Mint Arrow Messages on Instagram. And then if you have a second and you love the show, I would love it so much if you'd leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. That's the only way people can find out about us if they haven't heard about us before. So just go tap the stars, leave a rating or a review. If you have a second, we would appreciate it so much.